Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News, where we give you facts and not opinion. What a show we have for you today. You better buckle your seatbelts. We've got quite a few things flying at us, including some new polling data. The Just the News team has started a new poll with the great pollster Scott Rasmussen. And our first couple polls are going to give you some insights as to why the President Trump, may be talking about how important it is to restart the economy. You're going to learn what Americans think and why Joe Biden has been pretty hard to find in the middle of this coronavirus pandemic. Some really great polling data. And then we have exclusive interviews first with one of the great professors at Hillsdale College who talks a little bit about what that college has been doing to offer free online courses to high school students who are trapped at home with their parents. They may not have online learning from their high schools, or they may be trying to get ready for college. And Hillsdale College has done something very special. They've opened up a bunch of free courses for high schoolers to take. And we're going to talk about that dynamic and also how the nature of learning may be permanently changed by this stay-at-home pandemic experience that we're all going through. And then when we come back from that, we have former Congressman Daryl Issa. Yes, he's trying to make a comeback to Congress in California's 50th district. He, if you remember, was the congressman who did the Fast and Furious oversight hearings. He did many other great hearings involving oversight of government agencies. He is here to talk about pandemic, about the FBI, about elections. So much to talk about. You're not going to want to miss Daryl Issa's insights. Here's a hint. He's not a big fan of the World Health Organization. But first, we're going to go to a commercial break. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the exclusive stories we've been breaking on Just the News, the inside scoop. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the commercial break. You're not going to want to miss us. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as we promised, in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Hillsdale professor Kyle Mernon. He's got a fantastic story about a suite of online learning courses that the college out in Michigan has made available for free for parents and for their high school students to take along, everything from the Constitution to the Federalist Papers to many other very important things, World War II, a course by Victor David Hansen, the great historian. It is a really fun story, and it just shows all the innovative ways that people are adapting life as we're trapped at home. Hillsdale College comes to the rescue for high school students who may not have their own online learning courses or just want to get a taste of college early. It's a fun story. We also have, as I mentioned, Congressman Daryl Issa, the former congressman, trying to make a comeback in Congress this fall. He was one of the House's most important oversight chairmen for a long time. He's got some really important things to talk about NIH, the World Health Organization, the CDC, all of the federal bureaucracy failures in the healthcare crisis that we're now experiencing in the pandemic. And he talks about the FBI, lots of great things. We're going to break that interview into two parts. You'll get the rest of it on Thursday, but you're not going to want to miss Daryl Issa's insights. He really understands what goes wrong in government, how you fix it, how you do real oversight in Congress. And I think his insights will be extraordinarily interesting. Now, at Just the news. We had a new addition to our repertoire this week. We started a daily poll. That's right. We're measuring your sentiments in real America about the issues that matter. And our first couple of polls yesterday and today are some real newsworthy ones because they dig into the underlying sentiments that we all have about the pandemic and about our leaders. And I just want to give you some early results. So yesterday's poll had a real eye-opener for me, and that was, you think in the middle of a pandemic, maybe the biggest fear that people have, the biggest concern they have is about their health. Am I going to get this virus? Am I going to die from it? Am I going to get pneumonia? Am I going to end up in the hospital? But it turns out that the great poll done by Scott Rasmussen, the great pollster, here's what it found. The number one fear that Americans have about this pandemic, 30% of Americans total, loss of income. They're worried about the economy. Explains a little bit why President Trump keeps trying to signal optimism that we are going to get this economy opened, that we're not going to have to stay in this hunched down position in our homes for forever. There's a real fear in America that we're going to lose our ability to pay our bills and to keep our home, keep our jobs. Number one thing. The second biggest fear, 27%, was inability to get supplies. If you've been to the grocery store lately, you know why you're talking about there. 23% were concerned about other issues. And then the most important one, 4%, was only health. Only 4% of America think that health, getting sick, possibly dying, catching this terrible virus, was the biggest fear they held from the pandemic. Very eye-opening and explains some of the dynamics you're seeing playing out in the political spectrum today. Now, the new one coming out today, hot off the presses, is which of our Democratic leaders has shown the most leadership up when compared to President Trump during the pandemic. And so President Trump gets high marks for his leadership during the pandemic, not surprising, as the commander-in-chief and on television every day with his briefings. Andrew Cuomo finished at the top of the list, the New York governor, not surprising. He's had a daily press conference just like President Trump and has shown assertiveness and command. And quite frankly, the two of them, Trump and Cuomo, have had a lot of bipartisan moments praising each other and working with each other and calling each other. But the guy who didn't show up in the top three, he finished four out of five, Joe Biden. That's right. The presumptive Democrats nominee for the fall election against President Trump. He came in fourth out of five among the Democratic leaders that Americans thought were doing a good job. Very low showing for him. He's been sort of invisible for much of this pandemic, you know, does a podcast here and a talk show there. But this has to be a concern for Democrats in the real field, in the election, and what they're seeing. They have to be concerned that Joe Biden hasn't found a way to gain oxygen, to show leadership, to come up with ideas that capture the American fancy as we're trying to get back on our feet after this horrific virus and this pandemic. Two real eye-opening polls. A great way to start the new Just the News Daily Poll with Scott Rasmussen. Every day at 2 o'clock, if you come to the Just the News website, you can check out our latest findings. Here's a hint. On Wednesday, there's going to be a poll about the FBI and Americans' trust in the FISA process. You're going to want to see that one. It's a barn burner. All right, one more thing before we go to the commercial break and get ready for for our conversations with Hillsdale and with Daryl Issa. I want to talk about a great piece of enterprise, once again, by my colleague Christine Dolan. She has done amazing work in digging into how federal bureaucratic agencies, hospital bureaucracies have all let us down in the months and years leading up to this pandemic. Everybody knew a big pandemic was coming. Bill Gates, congressional hearings. We've talked about it. We created a stockpile. We created experts and bureaucracies to prepare for this. And then when the actual pandemic hit, we found ourselves short of ventilators, short of respirators. And we're talking by hundreds of millions of missing respirators. She's dug into every aspect of which agencies dropped the ball on each item. But there's a really interesting interview she did today with Dennis Carroll. And you probably have never heard of Dennis Carroll, but he is the chief U.S. virus hunter. For 15 years, starting with President Bush and continuing through the Obama and Trump years, Dennis Carroll was the man sent out to the front lines to find the next big virus that might jump from animals like bats and jump into humans and create the potential for a pandemic or an outbreak, sickening people with something that we had no immunity to, a virus that we had no immunity to. And he, Christine really pressed him on, how are we getting this wrong? What are we doing wrong? And he had some sentiments that I think a lot of us in real America share. He said, first off, that COVID-19 was detected last year. They saw it in the animals on the front line. We just didn't trigger the global response that we needed to get ready to protect humanity for when it jumped to humans. And so sleep at the switch, the WHO, CDC, all those not seeing this new COVID-19 virus that was appearing in animals, making that leap and then taking over the world with sickness. So that's a big eye-opener. I didn't know that they had detected it in animals a year ago, but it clearly was on our radar. It just didn't trigger action. But he said that the problem isn't just this episode. The problem is the entire paradigm that by which the world governments, the World Health Organization, for instance, and Daryl Issa is going to talk a lot about that later, but and our federal science agencies, what's wrong with our approach? And it's basically we've been in too much of a defensive posture. And I'm going to read you this quote from Christine Dolan's story tomorrow, today on Just the News. Go see it. It's worth reading. Dennis Carroll, chief U.S. virus hunter, here's what he had to say. Quote, we need to stop playing victims, stop being reactive and on defense, and go on offense and take the fight of global health security to the viruses themselves. We knew a coronavirus was out there a year ago in animals. Now it's in us. We needed to go after them instead of them coming to us. We dropped the ball. That is a fascinating insight from the guy who we've trusted for the last 15 years to give us the warning. The warning was there. The posture that Americans and our science community and our hospitals found themselves in is the problem. Rather than going out and finding the next virus and starting to get testing done on potential immunizations and vaccinations, and finding interim medicines that can help with treatment, lessen the symptoms, reverse the damage that's being done. We have a system that just waited till it hit us, and then we went to our stockpile, found out it was empty, and before you know it, we're upside down on a pandemic, and we're all locked in our homes, and the economy's come to a screeching halt. You got to read Dennis Carroll's prescriptions. He has a tremendous idea for how we fix this, how we learn from this terrible mistake, just like we learned from the mistakes of 9/11 and our failure to be ready for terrorism. We can learn from this episode. We can reform our science agencies. He has some really big ideas that are quite simple to fund, quite simple to address, quite simple to execute, and I encourage you to read it. And one last one, I'll give you a little scoop. Tomorrow morning, we're going to have a great story on Just the News. It's one I've been working on. And I call it the great sugar pill because this story hasn't been told. We've heard a lot of finger pointing and blaming going on among politicians. The Republicans say, and correctly so, that Barack Obama didn't resupply the stockpile of masks. That's why we're short. We hear Democrats say President Trump didn't do this or that quick enough, and that's why we're in this crisis. And that's just the classic politics of Washington. But here's something that may have been one of the biggest and most important missed opportunities in this pandemic. Back in October 2018, the chief watchdog for the Health and Human Services Department, HHS as we call it, did a survey of hospitals. It was the second one in 4 years. And back in 2014, hospitals raised their hand and said, we don't feel like we're ready for a pandemic. We don't have supplies. We don't have training. We don't have medicines. We don't have protocols. We don't have routines. We don't have isolation units. We're not ready. That's what they said in 2014. Well, at the midway into the second year of the Trump administration, the HHS IG, the inspector general, the chief watchdog, went back to these hospitals. He interviewed 400 of them. And here's what happened. 86% of them said, yep, we're ready for the pandemic. We've beefed up on supplies. We've beefed up on training. We've beefed up on isolation. We've beefed up on beds, on respirators. We're in pretty good shape, although we could be overwhelmed, but we're in pretty good shape. Well, that turns out to be a pretty big sugar pill that had a lot of costly consequences. It turns out, as we now know, that hospitals did not have enough supplies, did not have enough training. They didn't even have the basic $2, $3 mask that their nurses and doctors and frontline healthcare workers could wear to protect themselves from the virus. What a drop ball, what a sugar pill they served all of us back in October of 2018. When this is all done, we're going to take a look at all these different agencies, the World Health Organization, didn't do what it needed to do to warn us about what was going on in China. The CDC was slow to get testing out. The NIH dropped the ball on drugs like chloroquine and others that showed promise, but we never put them into clinical tests against earlier coronaviruses. And so we started from square one at the beginning of this pandemic. And I think another agency or another bureaucracy that's going to be highlighted for its failures, its cost-cutting, its unpreparedness are the hospital bureaucracies of America. These hospitals have let their workers and doctors and nurses go out into danger, even though there was plenty of money and time to prepare for this. And I encourage you to read this report along with Christine Dolan's report, the great interview with Dennis Carroll, the chief U.S. virus hunter. You'll find both on justthenews.com. You won't be disappointed. All right, when we come back from the commercial break, we're going to hear from Hillsdale College, our friends there. What a great program they have. They're giving your high school students some free online learning while they're trapped at home. You don't want to miss that. And then after that, Daryl Issa, the former congressman, joins us. We're going to talk about a lot of needed oversight in America. You're not going to want to miss either one of those interviews, so stay tuned. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for $30. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, I have with me Professor Kyle Mernon from Hillsdale College. And they're doing some amazing stuff during the middle of this pandemic with a project that they call The Great American Story, which is giving high school students an opportunity to begin learning at the college level while they're trapped at home with mom and dad. Professor Mernon, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here, John. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about what inspired this and what the reaction has been so far with this course.
So we decided to do this course. There's this great professor from the University of Oklahoma. His name's Wilfred McClay. He's also a teaching fellow here at Hillsdale College. He wrote a book called The Land of Hope, which is a high school history textbook, also a college history textbook. And there aren't many great ones of those out there. A lot of times they're difficult to read. Often they aren't good narratives, but ideological in nature, right? And kind of tell the tale of America as a tale of repression or oppression and injustice. And so he wrote this great book called The Land of Hope. And we wanted to do an online course based on that book. So we produced that earlier this year. It's a 25 lecture course. It tells the great story of America from its discovery all the way through today. And we thought that was a great thing for all of us to study. And so we created this free online course for any American to take.
That's amazing. And when you created it, you had no idea there was a pandemic coming. But when the pandemic struck, tell me what happened. What sort of reaction did you get from high school students and students all across the country?
Yeah, we have a lot of people that are stuck at home and a lot of high school students who unfortunately have their school years interrupted. So we put together a 3-week study session. We're actually on week 3 right now. 10,000 people joined us. A large percentage of them are high school students taking the course. And we want to just work through these lessons, have some additional discussion. We're going to have a high school essay contest connected to this course. And so it was just a nice opportunity for us to keep our sanity and be a little bit productive during this strange time.
It's really amazing. And 10,000 is a huge number. So what happened? How did the word of mouth come? How did people, you know, glob onto this and find out about this so quickly?
Yeah, it was really exciting. So we have a decent audience here at Hillsdale through Primus and some of our other outreach efforts. We've been doing these online courses for 8 years now, and a good number of people take those. But it was exciting. And in short notice, we just promoted this idea for a couple of days and then started the course. In short notice, we just had a great response, and that's been really encouraging. So obviously there was some word of mouth, and I think, you know, I'm a parent as well with some school-aged kids. I think a lot of parents were looking around and saying, what are we going to do these next few months? And I think this was a great opportunity for some parents.
Wow, that's fantastic. Now, here's the big question. What's next? If this obviously took off and got the public's fancy right away, where do you go next with this?
Well, so, you know, I think this was an appropriate one. We talk about, you know, needing to know American history. Dr. McClay says history keeps us from falling into the trap of the exceptional now, right? We need to understand American history and the trials we've had in the past if we're going to, you know, face difficult things in the present. So that's been really appropriate. I think the next one, we'll do a similar course or a similar program for our Constitution 101 course. It's probably our most popular free online course we have here at the college. And that just examines the Declaration and the Constitution. What are the principles? How have these documents been understood and treated throughout American history from, you know, the sectional conflict of the Civil War through the Progressive Era all the way to today? So that's a very popular and important course. And I think a nice one to pair with the study of American history, right? So know the people and places and things, and then also know the political principles of America. And so that'll probably be the next big push that we make.
That's really exciting. And it's funny, when I talk around the country, one of the things that I hear from people my generation up is a concern that there's sort of a civics gap in America, that civics and history are... Yeah. A place that we have a blind spot in our younger generation. So this is a sort of thing that could really fill a void. If you're stuck at home, you can be learning and becoming more civically responsible, more civically literate, while passing the time during the middle of a pandemic. It sounds like a great opportunity. As you look out, and you know, Hillsdale has the traditional classes in their classrooms. Is this pandemic going to change the nature of learning? Are we going to see more remote learning, more online learning, just because of the forced nature of what we had to go through the last few weeks?
You know, that seems to be the case. And in a lot of ways, you know, Hillsdale is reluctant about that, right? Because we see how important and how beautiful it is to be able to have our students here on campus, the kind of culture and the kind of environment you have when you have a professor with a small classroom, and you can discuss these ideas and figure them out as a group. We think that's the best, but it does seem like more education is going to be pushed online, and we're going to have to figure out good ways to do that and to try to capture the best of what happens here on campus and in the classroom. So that does seem to be the case, John, and we're going to try to figure that out as best we can.
It is remarkable. So what is the status at on campus right now? All students are home, right? And Hillsdale is essentially in a kind of a remote learning situation?
Yeah, that is. It is very strange here for it to be April in Hillsdale and the campus is quiet. The faculty is still here. They're teaching their courses. Most of them are doing it over video conferencing and having the conversation that way, and it seems like the spirit for the students is pretty high. They're all logging in and doing their work and staying pretty optimistic about it all. Although, you know, this is an especially sad time to have school closed. This time of year is when we have all of our fun events and we get to honor the seniors. It's tough to be shut down at this time.
Yeah, that's when you're most want human contact, when you can celebrate, and especially for those who've been in school for 4 years and we're looking forward to their graduation. If you have a crystal ball and you're using it right now, how will Hillsdale's graduation and how will the summer play out? Because you have summer courses, right, and summer students. What sort of plans is the university making to get through these next few months?
You know, I'm not certain on that. I know that Dr. Arne is the president of the college. He's doing all that he can possible to bring the students back as early as it is safe to do so. So we're trying to figure that out right now. I think we're hoping to do that sometime in April. I'm not sure if that's going to be possible. I do know that we're going to look for some way, certainly to get the seniors back here and give them some kind of appropriate send-off. If it's not May, sometime in the summer, to make sure that we end the year on a good and appropriate note. I think that's the work that they're trying to figure out right now. But you've been covering this. Everything changes so much day by day, right, John? It's hard to make any firm predictions right now.
Yeah, no, I think we're still learning as we go. And, you know, there's some hopeful signs that markets are up to this week. And I think also one of the early signs that there are appears to be some cresting in New York and Italy, which were hotspots. So yeah. I know hope springs eternal that we are eventually going to put this behind us. But I think you're right. The fluid nature of it is what has made it so challenging. For those who want, if there's a mom and dad, a grandparent, or a student that's looking, how do you get into this course? What's the easy way to get online and find this course and get learning?
So we try to keep it pretty simple for people. You can go to online.hillsdale.edu. That's online.hillsdale.edu. That's our website. You can go there. You can see Land of Hope and our 24 other free courses. Just simply click on one of those courses, enter your email address and your name, create a password, and then you're taken right to the course page. And you can take any of those 25 courses for free. We hope you come back often and learn with us. And we do try to produce a lot of the great courses that our undergraduates take here, a lot of the required courses that we have here. So anybody in America can have a taste and get a sense of the kind of learning that happens in Hillsdale and really enjoy studying some of the greatest things that's possible to know.
And it's totally free, which you don't hear very often in America today. That's a pretty good price.
Yep. Yeah, we like keeping it at that price, and it's pretty fun.
So of the 24 courses, what are some of the other topics that people can dig into?
Sure. There's a lot of there's some good variety there. We have a really popular course called The Genesis Story on the Book of Genesis. We have a course on the Second World Wars taught by Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. It's very popular. Of course, on C.S. Lewis, which has been really good, Constitution 101, the Federalist Papers, courses on the presidency and the Supreme Court and Congress, courses on great literature, so the great books, Shakespeare, Mark Twain, and then courses, we have a Theology 101 course on free market economics. So there are a range of courses that you can take and kind of build your liberal arts education online with us.
Now, do you get accredited points for towards your college degree if you take these, or are these mostly for exercising the mind?
These are for love of learning. These do not. Excellent. We do not have accredited online courses at this point. Right. So it's for a free general audience.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, for all of us trapped at home trying to keep our minds sharp and our kids out of trouble, this is an extraordinary opportunity. When I heard about it the other day, I couldn't wait to learn more and to introduce it to our podcast listeners. All right, folks, so let me give you, this is as easy a URL as you're ever going to remember. It's online.hillsdale.edu. Let me try that one more time. It's online.hillsdale.edu. It's 24 courses, everything from World War II to the Federalist Papers, and a great way to keep your high school students, your college students, or even mom and dad occupied while we're all trapped at home enjoying family life together. So I can't thank you enough for joining us, and we'll check back in a few months. I'd like to learn a little bit more about how education is going to adapt in this era of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll have you back soon to talk about the things that are adapting in the learning space.
No, I appreciate it, John. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Have a great day. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Hey, folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD. That's 800-200-GOLD, and find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653, or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon Just the News family. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, and when we come back, Daryl Issa, the former congressman from California, trying to make a comeback in California's 50th district this fall. He's got a big story to tell on oversight, what we learned in the past, and what we're going to learn in the future about the agencies that are letting us down, NIH, CDC, the World Health Organization, and yes, the FBI in the Russia case. First, let's go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back with Daryl Issa. You know what, folks? Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you've got moderate to high stress like I do, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain, and you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings, right? Now the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Now, if your life is a bit stressful like mine and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Now get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. That's takelean.com and enter the promo code JustNews15. That's the promo code JustNews15 at takelean.com. One more time, takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, and it's not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And joining me, as promised, is Congressman Daryl Issa from California. The congressman served for 20 years, more than 20 years, actually, in Congress. I got to know him when I was a reporter with the Associated Press, doing a lot of the oversight issues that he did in Congress. And then he retired in 2018 and is now coming back to run in the 50th District of California and try to keep that seat in Republican hands this fall. Congressman Issa, good to have you with us.
Well, good to be on. You know, it's in California, we're known for recycling. I think even politicians, apparently.
How about that? Well, there's a lot to give there. The congratulations first. I guess you won your primary back in March, and now it's a two-man race for the fall election.
It is, and it's an interesting time because we're not able to campaign. So the very nature of this race is that we're sort of locked in. Where were we in March when everything shut down? And it may be that way, well, a lot closer to November than we'd like.
Yeah, that's the scary part. So it really has changed. I've noticed, like, on your Twitter and Facebook feeds, you do virtual updates for your future constituents, correct?
Exactly. We're trying to, I don't want to say act like an incumbent, but because there is no current member in the 50th congressional, I've been working with my my former colleagues and future colleagues to make sure that I can provide updates to people in the 50th congressional district. Plus, I'm quite lucky that I have longstanding relationships with my mayors and county supervisors, and they've been incredibly helpful to try to fill in the void.
And the how are constituents reacting? Obviously, they're locked indoors just like you, but what sort of engagement and activities are you able to do to reach out to everyday constituents in your district?
Well, we've done both teletown hall meetings via conventional phone, but we've also done Zoom. What we're finding is that people want human contact. So where, you know, a lot of times the information's available on a website, they still want to hear a voice tell them a little bit about it. And particularly that balancing question that the president is wrestling with and that our country is wrestling with, which is, how much is safety worth? In other words, how much is a human life worth versus our economy? And, you know, people aren't in one camp or the other. They're sort of in between, saying, you know, I'm concerned about the future. I'm concerned about my family. Let's not wreck the economy. How can we do both? Be relatively safe, minimize the loss of life, but keep our economy strong.
It is the big debate. We had a poll yesterday on Just the News, which is our new news organization. And the overwhelming concern that Americans cited out of the five most important concerns was the loss of income and their fear that this thing would drag on long enough that they would lose their home or their mortgage or their payments. And then interestingly, three down from that was concern about health. It was much lower, like 6% had that as their primary concern. As we get further into this, how do we resolve this question? Do you have in your mind the sort of data points that you think are there that we need to hit in order to let some people get back into the workforce and resume all that human contact we had just a month ago?
I do. Working with Admiral Jackson, Ronnie Jackson, who was for many years the White House physician, and it, oddly enough, is going to be a congressman from Texas 13, we put together a number of ideas and presented them to the White House, basically showing that if you can have an essential person at McDonald's or Burger King providing food, or at Costco providing, you know, wholesale items, then the question is, who is equally or even more qualified to go back to work in what may not be essential on a daily basis, but is essential for our economy? And I'll just give you the easy answer. Today, you have automotive repair places are open in California. They're essential. And there's not a lot of business. People are deferring maintenance a lot. Right. But the manufacturer of parts, in many cases in the United States, repair parts for those cars, Ford, GM, Chrysler, and the like, they're shut down. So for today, the essential is consuming a stockpile of parts. If we do not begin to roll those people back in some safe way to producing the parts needed to keep our automobiles on the road, then the essential people won't be able to work. And that concept of every job, everyone is ultimately essential, we could debate whether or not there are some non-essential, but the people who produce the goods and services necessary for essential personnel to do their job must be back to work. And so rolling out in stages by region and by manufacturer, that ability as soon as possible has to be part of the president's one-month agenda of who could we put back to work safely.
That's going to be the real challenge. And your sense is that people are beginning to map those issues out, right? Try to figure out where in the chain we begin that process?
Absolutely. And let's look at the American psyche, too. What's important to an American to keep us positive and productive? If you're sitting at home and over time, it's very depressing. You're all alone. Even if you're working, your productivity is going to go down. So for an example, and I use this example because I think it's important to Americans, we're already in baseball season, but there's no baseball. Now, we understand why we can't fill a stadium or baseball park filled with 30,000 attendees. But there's a real question about how long before with the appropriate separation that pretty much exists on a baseball team, why is it we couldn't put baseball players back to work, even if it's only televised? Is that a way to begin normalizing for America without taking an undue risk? There are some contact sports that are much harder to do, but golf and baseball and a number of areas without, you know, large crowds could well be part of that structure. And the leadership of President Trump in this case of separating us so we could break the back of this virus was essential. But bringing us in an organized way back together is equally important. And it's part of what many of us are trying to provide counseling, if you will, to people in the White House, because as you can imagine, there's nothing more isolated right now than being in the Oval Office at a time when it's almost impossible to have those face-to-face.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, he's surrounded by doctors who have all the right medical advice, but you also need economy doctors. And you obviously bring something special to this because before your time in Congress, you were CEO of a large company. So you sort of know the economic side of this. And are you finding the White House welcoming of this sort of advice?
Well, I'm finding them welcoming. I will share something, though, because the one thing you know in business is the smartest businessmen hire smarter people. Yesterday, I spent about half an hour on the phone with Art Laffer going over a 7-page report that the White House asked him to give, which he did, and reviewing it, because the president isn't just reaching out to a businessman here or there. He's reaching out to some of these amazing longtime economists. As you know, Art Laffer was a whiz kid. Well, he was actually in the Nixon White House and survived, and then was in the Reagan White House as the head of the economic section. And he continues to be a perfect example of somebody who understands what it takes, where the levers are in our economy. And he, for one, like myself, knows that we can, in fact, get ourselves back into productivity, and we must.
Yeah, it's interesting to know that many those minds are all coming together now and trying to give the best philosophy and tactics to get us into a normal rhythm again. You had a history in Congress of doing really aggressive oversight, helping Americans understand when their government did things wrong. I remember very poignantly the work you did with the Border Patrol after the Brian Terry death and the investigations you did there. At some point, the question that Americans ask me every day is going to have to be answered by Congress. How did we enter into a pandemic like this so ill-prepared in our federal bureaucracy? And I'm curious, as you look at it, as someone who did a lot of very effective oversight for many years, where would you start in this tale of unpreparedness and lack of supplies and all the things that President Trump inherited from the prior administrations?
Well, it actually begins globally at the World Health Organization. We are the largest contributor to that organization, and they have the principal responsibility for seeing a pandemic early on, for recognizing hotspots of various, everything from, you know, obviously this virus to Ebola to AIDS and so on. And our investment there has been a poor investment in many ways, because their bureaucracy has essentially said a pandemic is inevitable, rather than saying what are the steps it takes when the inevitable happens. So I start there with recognizing that we can't depend on the World Health Organization. We're going to have to find a way to duplicate that in the U.S. for our global reach. But then when you get to the CDC, they really seem to have said, well, we work with the World Health Organization. Well, that's that next step of don't let a domestic bureaucracy count on a global bureaucracy that is essentially given up. And so for the CDC, the aftermath is going to be the things we were able to do, thanks to President Trump's leadership and Vice President Pence's, in 30, 60, 90 days. Let's talk about how many of those you should have had sitting on a shelf at a reasonable cost. Faster testing, low blood testing, capability and a plan to quickly come up with a virus vaccine in 30, 60, 90 days, not in a year and a half. Those questions will have to be asked. And as you can tell by those doctors that are surrounding the president today, they can look the American people in the eye in the middle of this pandemic and say it's going to take a year and a half to have a vaccine, even though they have what appears to be a working vaccine today. It's that kind of bureaucratic timetable that Congress is going to have to say, we cannot afford it. Too many lives are at stake, and too much of the global economy is at stake.
We had an interview this morning with the chief U.S. virus hunter, a guy named Dennis Carroll. And for 15 years, starting with President Bush back in 2005, he was the guy out on the horizon looking and trying to find what next virus might jump from animals to humans and potentially lead to a pandemic. And so he lived through SARS, he lived through H1N1 and all the Ebola crisis in 14. And he said something fascinating to our reporter, Christine Doling, and said the problem with the American approach to pandemics is we play the victim. We're reactive, we're on defense, and we should be on offense. There's a way to get ahead of these viruses and create immunizations early that are generic to a coronavirus family that you can quickly adapt and then put into the marketplace. Do you feel like we've been, for maybe the last 10, 20 years, too much on defense with viruses and that there's a chance to go on offense like the ways you just talked about?
Well, absolutely. And the coronavirus is a good example, although corona generally is the shape of the virus. We have had vaccines for various coronaviruses for our dogs and cats and so on. And as you know, recently a zoo keeper infected his cats with his coronavirus. So recognizing that these viruses can and will jump between humans and animals, we have to be in a position where we look at every virus that an animal has, and we assume it'll eventually get to man, and we prepare for that, and vice versa. Recognize that that human viruses can and will get into animals and, of course, mutate and come back a little different. This kind of science is well understood, but the speed of science simply has been allowed to get slower rather than faster. And I know your listeners are well informed, but it would shock even the most well-informed person to see how much time and money has been added to vaccine production in the last two decades, more than doubling in constant dollars the price, and typically adding 50% to the time. You would think that in a modern era, everything gets faster and more efficient, but not viruses. And it's not because they become more complicated. It's because we've become more bureaucratic.
That's, I think, at the end of the day, what we're going to learn about this crisis, which is that it's the ultimate failure of a chain of bureaucracies. You mentioned WHO and the WHO, and you mentioned CDC. Another one that I think you and many other good congressmen did good oversight on over the years was NIH, where we provide about $40 billion a year in research money, and then we end up with studies like what do you do with drunken monkeys, or how do you stop kids from drinking at a tailgate party, and we don't get some of the expenditures on things that were flagged, let's say, in 03 and 04 and 05 when the first studies came out and said, hey, there's this drug chloroquine, it looked like it worked on some of the early SARS and MERS patients, maybe we should look at it. Is there a day of reckoning coming ahead for federal science agencies that they should spend our dollars better and cut our red tape quicker?
There should be, and there has to be. And the transparency of the NIH has been a problem. Their theory, and they'll tell you straight to your, that you shouldn't interfere with science. And many of my Democratic friends will defend the fact that, well, you can't interfere with science. And it's like, well, wait a second. We're not interfering with science. We're interfering with the science's decision of where money gets spent. I'll never forget many, many years ago, oddly enough, Jeff Flake was still a House member, and he asked to take down an amendment, or have an amendment to take down an appropriation at NIH for a grant for studying the effects of marijuana and malt liquor on college co-eds. and you can imagine the debate on the floor of people who said, well, yeah, we kind of do know the effect. Absurd study. And what was amazing, it wasn't even the first in a family of similar studies. And those kinds of things, although novel and interesting and sometimes funny on the floor of the House, are examples where I'm not asking to spend less money. I'm asking to spend it in a way that saves more lives and that puts real attention toward either pure research or research toward a specific goal, and not this sort of fanciful who submitted a grant that somebody NIH likes the guy. And I will say this, NIH's biggest problem, they always say it stands for not invented here, but their biggest problem consistently is their own peer review people are in fact the people who decide who gets grants, often to its their own peer review. And the incestuousness of that organization has to be changed. You've got to be at a point where the decision makers are not exclusively, or even the majority of the decision makers cannot be the recipients.
It is remarkable. And I did a series of stories back in the late 90s, early 2000s that revealed that a lot of NIH researchers, they take taxpayer money, they invent a patent for a drug or a medicine that's going to become part of drugs, and then they get to keep the royalties on that drug, even though the American taxpayer funded the original research. And so there's an interesting culture in the NIH that's it's insular. And until we have events like a pandemic, most Americans don't understand the culture that has brought on this huge bureaucracy.
No, and this, by the way, is true not just in the NIH. The University of California at San Diego receives over $1 billion of grant money, mostly for biologics, and almost all of it, if successful, will turn into patents that do not come to the United States government, but in fact go to the professors and some of the pharmaceuticals who oversee it, but ultimately don't make the big investment until they can see that it's going to earn them a dividend. And right. Again, that's one of those things where you kind of ask, wait a second, if this is our money, our investment and our risk, I have no problem with monetizing it, but why is it so little ends up in the taxpayers' refund for this $1 billion in just one university of investment?
All right, America, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. So glad you joined us. So appreciative of your support of Just the News and also of all the Just the News advertisers that are supporting this podcast and our website, making our investigative and enterprise reporting possible. We're going to be back on Thursday for part two of the Daryl Issa interview. You're not going to want to miss that. He talks about elections and Nancy Pelosi and the role that healthcare and other issues will play. And more importantly, he also talks about the FBI and the way that agency needs to repair itself to get back Americans' trust, to give us all confidence that when they spy in America's under the FISA law, that we believe they're complying with the law. And we're also going to be joined on Thursday by none other than Scott Rasmussen, the great pollster. Yes, he is the new pollster for Just the News and the Just the News Daily Poll with Scott Rasmussen. We're going to talk about some of our big new findings, the early polls that are coming out, some real shockers about what you and real America are thinking about. And of course, we'll have new breaking news and investigative reporting from justthenews.com. So please come back and join us on Thursday. We're so grateful. Until then, be safe, be healthy, enjoy your families, be productive, and let's all look forward to the moment when we can reopen America and get back to work, get back to everyday life. I miss baseball, I have to admit it. I miss it badly, but it'll be here soon. All right, folks, talk to you on Thursday. Folks, everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's what we learned from this last pandemic, right? That's where the Wellness Company comes in. You know the Wellness Company. We have their great doctors like Dr. Peter McCullough on all the time on our shows. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust, and the new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy, and most importantly, prepared. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications, so you know what you're doing. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID and even the bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to keep you and your family safe from whatever the globalists throw your way. Go to www.twchealth/justnews today in order. That's twc.health/justnews and use the promo code justnews to save 10%. Hey folks, can your IRA or 401k stand up to the next financial crisis that our top economists are saying is right at our doorstep? By allocating a percentage of your retirement into physical gold and silver with a tax-free rollover, you can diversify and safeguard your holdings from a turbulent market and economic downturns. All you got to do is put your IRA back on the gold standard. With a multi-trillion dollar trade deficit and ongoing geopolitical instability, experts say now is the time to make the switch. Find out how to safeguard your assets with a tax-free rollover with a Genesis Gold IRA, the only IRA that can hold physical precious metals. Protect your retirement today with one simple phone call and receive your free gold and silver guide from my good friends at Genesis Gold. To do that, call Genesis Gold Group today at 800-200-GOLD Gold. That's 800-200-GOLD. And find out how you can add precious metals to your IRA. One more time, let me give you the number. It's 800-200-4653. 800-200-4653 or gold, or visit them at genesisgoldgroup.com. Genesis Gold, welcome to the John Solomon, Just the News family.